Welcome and happy new year, everyone. Welcome to Redacted on this Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the new year. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we seek the truth wherever it may take us. We don't do the stories that the mainstream media covers.
What are you looking to me for? Yes, that's true.
Well, you know, it's new year. I'm just like, it's like 2 weeks. We've been off for 2 weeks. And you're
oil
like,
can. Hang on a second. Squeak. Click, 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 click.
Yeah, it's like I need that from the Wizard of Oz. Holy smokes.
Do you want me to take it back from here, darling?
No, it's good to be back. It's good to be back in the studio. Holy smokes. What words coming out of my mouth. Welcome back to the new year. This is Redacted. So glad to have you all here. I mean, we've been doing this show now for well over almost going on 2 years now or so. And it's great to be able to like take the time off to reset, to think about what we want to accomplish for the new year and come back and do a kick-ass show.
Yeah, it is. I'm happy to be back. I think Clayton's happy to be back.
I'm very happy
Let's
to be back.
See what happens, you guys. Redacted starts right now.
Just as you were mocking me about having false starts about the show, Natalie just skipped all of the news stories in tonight's yeah. show.
I know. We're right going off script. Okay, so let's tell them what they can expect.
I was like, whoa, where's that button? Where's that button? Where's that
Sorry.
Button?
Yes. Sorry.
See, that's called karma. It's instant karma. So we do have a very busy show for you on this Wednesday. We've got a lot of stories we're going to cover here on the show. So here's the rundown. Let's put that up on the screen. Thank you, Philip. So we're talking about COVID mandates returning. So 11 states already have different versions of COVID mandates, ranging from mask mandates to vaccine mandates already in place. Like, we thought we got through this crap. No. We're back right here once again. And they're trying to couch all of this interestingly about the flu and RSV and sort of lumping all of these things together as one respiratory problem. And so they can make your kids go back to school wearing masks. Like, didn't we learn our lesson on this?
Apparently not.
No, we didn't. And we're going to show you the new data that's literally out today on how detrimental this has been for children.
All right. And we also have two, not one, but two new rounds of Twitter files that show just how insidious the government reach has been inside of Twitter, and how the government basically asked Twitter to scrounge up some Russiagate for them. Twitter had a hard time with this. We're going to look at the internal documents of Twitter trying to be a good puppy and do what their master said, and seemingly unable. These things will make your jaw drop.
Scrounge up some Russiagate. It's like, if I have an excuse, like, you know what? I'm just not feeling up to it tonight. Honey, can you scrounge up some Russiagate?
I'll see what I can find.
Can you make some stuff up? Like, Clayton can't do the show tonight. Let's scrounge up some Russiagate.
I mean, that is exactly what these documents show. We're going to show them to you. And you decide. You decide for yourself.
Fantastic investigative journalist Whitney Webb is going to be joining us here on the show tonight, because we've got two stories though we want to ask her about, specifically Sam Bankman-Fried, SBF, pleading not guilty, and what does this mean for an upcoming trial, and some really interesting deep state hidden malarkey that's been happening because of this, and that tied to a new update on the Jeffrey Epstein, I don't know what you want to call it, scandal, because a top prosecutor has been fired for going after the Jeffrey Epstein story.
Ooh, okay.
So Whitney Webb is going to be joining us here on the show to be talking all about that.
That's a big bag of ne'er-do-wells.
Yes, it is.
Plus, a new research paper out of Stanford shows that the COVID fatality rate was different than what they told us. I'm going to say different because we're going to present that story to you on Rumble, and we will show you some numbers that will make your jaw hit the floor.
Yeah, so we're proud to announce also we're going to be exclusive on Rumble starting now. We've joined their exclusive team at Rumble. So again, welcome to all of our Rumble viewers. We're going to be, the full live stream is available on Rumble and partially on YouTube because YouTube likes to censor content. So we're thrilled to be a part of the Rumble community, joining great talent, you know, like Glenn Greenwald, Kim Iverson,
Russell Brand,
David Rubin also just joining Rumble. So we're really excited about that, to be a member of the new Rumble community. And finally, one story we're going to talk about today, because we've been following the transhumanism story. Why are more and more people deciding to not only get surgeries to look like animals, but dress up like and act like animals? And this is okay behavior?
Because of the Dave Pilkey comics?
Maybe. To be like Dogman?
Yeah.
I guess so. This is like acceptable behavior now, where you can dress up like animals, go in your backyard, roll around in like a Dogman suit.
Okay.
So if you see me doing that, just say, hey, Clay, it's normal behavior now.
Cool.
I'm not going to get booted from the show, am I?
This is something you do.
I have not had the courage to put on my full suit for the show yet, but from the bottom down, I'm all dog.
You're all furry.
Okay. Well, we might need to, what is the word to validate your inner dog?
Yeah.
On Rumble only, though.
As Grimm said earlier to me, if we start having species-affirming surgeries... like, this is going to be game
then
over.
What?
But we already are. Like, and I told him, like, we already are having this. People are going and getting their bodies remade to be like animals because, you know, it's 2023 and that's what we do now.
Cannot wait for that.
So we got a lot of news to get to. We do have breaking news right now. We've been continuing to watch the drama out of Washington, D.C. Philip, if you want to take my laptop here, if you can. And we were watching live right now, Representative McCarthy literally.
You got to log in.
Yeah.
What? No, I'm plugged in.
That's the wrong laptop.
Oh.
So Representative McCarthy does not have the votes right now to become Speaker of the House. And this is now the seventh Speaker vote. Now, we've gone through this afternoon. It was postponed until today. The fourth vote took place today for Speaker of the House. He still does not have the votes. Fifth, sixth, and now the seventh vote unfolding right now. Still does not have the votes. This is really kind of an unbelievable moment. We haven't seen this type of drama in the House of Representatives for over 100 years. Normally, this is like a shoe-in.
Yeah.
You go and you get the votes, you're Speaker of the House. This is drama, and you have a lot of MAGA Republicans who've been fed up with McCarthy.
Yes.
And a lot of other people who stood up, like Chip Roy, who stood up and said, why are we spending $1.7 trillion? Why are we spending $1.7 trillion that the American people can't afford? And by the way, sending $50 billion to the most corrupt country in Europe, the country of Ukraine.
Well, Kevin McCarthy signaled that he was not down with that about 2 months ago, and he got dogpiled by establishment Republicans. That didn't seem to get him very far. Now, he did say this morning that he has the endorsement of President Trump. So that did not seem to endear any MAGA Republicans to vote for him, though, or change the situation. So then what?
Well, he did have the support of him. And then when asked about it yesterday, Trump came back and was like, we'll see how it goes. Are you still throwing your support behind him? He's like, well, we'll see how it goes. But then this afternoon, he tweets out or sends out a Truth Social message, which then gets retweeted, which I still don't, you know. And so he sends a message saying, time is now. Republicans need to rally around Kevin McCarthy. But there's plenty of Republicans who do want to think that he is not conservative at all and that he's part of the deep state swamp.
Uh-huh.
So... I don't know. The drama is interesting right now.
Which, did you know that he is the, he's the muse for the Kevin Spacey character?
Yes.
In
House of Cards.
In House of Cards. Yeah. Right? And so if that's, I mean, that's as deep state as they come. Well, although I only watched two seasons.
There's so many weird things with Kevin McCarthy. Let's be honest. Like the fact that he lives in an apartment with Frank Luntz, like in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Like he still won't really answer questions as to why he does that. Like he, I don't know. It's all very weird.
Strange.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've been following this in the newsletter, which reminds me, please subscribe to our newsletter. It's redacted.inc. It's free. Comes out Monday through Friday. You probably already know that our live show comes out Monday through Thursday. So it's just a little more redacted for you for free. And once you put in your email address, you will get an authenticated email. Go to your email, click it, and then we're off to the races.
That's right. All right. Well, let's start with our top story then. Let's talk about these COVID mandates. So just when you thought you heard the last of these COVID mandates and lockdowns, they're making a comeback just as strong as before, if not stronger, because now they know the opposition. The Biden administration is continuing its COVID emergency until at least April via the Transportation and Security Administration's requirement that all non-citizen travelers, so this is again, non-citizen U.S. travelers to be fully vaccinated coming into the United States. For what reason? What is the purpose of that?
I don't know. And when we get to the last block and we talk about the fatality rate that the government has known since before the vaccines were released, that why question is going to be even bigger and bolder and highlighted and squiggly and pink.
She's fired
up. It's a big question.
She's fired up. When she gets that pink cloth in her hand, you know, it's trouble.
I can't. I keep touching my glasses. I'm not good at being a glasses wearer.
So it's even worse for our children because you have this fully vaccinated for the, you know, to be a non-U.S. citizen traveler. But it's even worse for our children this morning because we can't let this happen to our children anymore. Schools across the United States are mandating that kids wear masks after the Christmas school break. So a lot of kids going back, let me know in the chat, like how many of your kids have started to go back? Have they already gone back? Are they going back soon? And in many states now, and in many jurisdictions, you will not be allowed to go back to school unless your kid wears a mask. This is awful. So according to the Daily Mail, quote, hundreds of thousands of students across the United States will be forced to wear masks in class when schools go back this week, as controversial mandates make a return. Despite COVID infection rates plateauing for months, elementary and high schools in New Jersey, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, those are the latest ones added to the list of eight already, have already made face coverings a condition of entry for students returning from the holidays. Education officials claim the policy is to prevent a boom in respiratory illnesses after increased mixing during the first normal Christmas and New Year's in years.
Now, recall when these mask mandates were put in place in certain districts in Pennsylvania, we did a segment here on the show. You look it up in September of 2022. And when school districts were asked what was the science behind those mask mandates specifically for the youngest, because in some districts, five and under have never been disallowed masks. They've been required all along, even up until now.
Five and under
for some reason. And when we went to those school districts' websites and we watched the school districts' board meetings, and they were asked about science, they were unable to provide it. And in fact, we showed you that so many of them had a 404 error when you clicked on why is this the case?
Right. When you went to their...
Do you remember when...
To their links, like, here's our science behind it. And you go to their link and it's like a dead web page. Like, oh, thanks for that. Go ahead, David.
Well, and I remember stories of parents getting in trouble for keeping their kids out of school for truancy or whatever. So is this the case? Like if a parent wanted to protest this and say, no, I'm not sending my kid to school, can they actually get in trouble by the, cause I've seen police show up actually, to parents' homes that were keeping their kids out of school.
I think that depends on state laws. But you know, I was recently listening to This American Life podcast about the students, in Michigan, the video went viral. Their parents were saying, they can't make you wear the mask, just go in the building. But once they were in the building, the teachers didn't let them in their classrooms. They put them in the library because they said, we don't know what to do with these kids. And the administrators called them naughty no-maskers. And these kids said, it basically set the tone for the entire school year. No one was able to recover. There was like, you know, some kids did wear a mask but wanted to sit with their friends because their parents felt differently. This is the last thing we should be putting on children.
Yeah, in fact.
Like, the controversy. I mean, I don't believe in the masks at this point for children either, but the controversy is not something we should be putting on children.
Well, and that's the whole point. You're using kids at this point as political pawns because we already know the science is out. It doesn't do anything. So therefore, it's just a political statement. So it's you're using kids as a political pawn to make some kind of statement.
I can't figure out what the statement is. I mean, they're trying to justify this, you know, that it's going to help reduce what hospitalizations. But again, what you're doing is you're prolonging the inevitable, because we now know from the evidence that by keeping people locked down and mask wearing and like letting people not create immunity, that eventually you're going to see these surges. It's, you know, it's the same thing like in the financial crisis. Like you don't allow it to collapse. you artificially prop it up, and eventually it's going to collapse because the dam just can't hold it anymore. And so the Daily Mail says this, but there's little evidence that face masks actually reduce infection rates, they say. And mounting research shows that the mandates stunted children's social development and education and robbed them of vital immunity to other seasonal bugs like flu and RSV. So by doing this again, you're preventing them from going into the nursery school and playing with the little snotty toys and then getting the bug and then getting immune to it and growing and building and becoming stronger as a result of it. Of course, here's the amazing part of the story. Weekly cases have been stable since late summer, which has been attributed to higher levels of immunity in populations that have had vaccinations and waves of infections. Schools in New Jersey are justifying the latest mask mandates, according to the story, due to the state suffering increases in COVID, flu, and RSV cases. The ruling comes as 22 states were recording very high flu activity in the week before Christmas, down from 26 the week prior. Six states were recording the highest levels of transmission, down from 8 in early December. So because of lockdowns and masking, we had very low flu and very low RSV. Natural immunity wasn't allowed to flourish. You can't build up an immune system if you're locked in a plastic bubble like the bubble boy. I mean, China's experiencing this right now. Mm-hmm. You lock an entire nation down. You force them to take tests every 24 hours. You don't let them leave the house. And suddenly the whole nation now has COVID.
Remember that Brie Larson movie, Room? Or the room she had that child who had never been outside.
Yeah, looked through a hole in the ceiling.
And then that child could not go out into the world until they built up its immunity.
Yeah.
Like it was stuck in a hospital and then it's, you know, there is some. That's not science. That's a movie. But still, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction.
I think it was, wasn't that, that was actually based on a true story.
I don't know. It's an awful.
It was based on a true story. So not just in the United States, the UK also back at it again with masking. Haven't they learned anything in Britain, by the way, about how detrimental masking has been on their population? So the National Health Service is under, you know, big political pressure right now to put in place new COVID restrictions, especially on public transport. So here's the London Underground and other public spaces. This from the Daily Mail. Commuters today were seen wearing face coverings again as health bosses urging Britons to protect the National Health Services amid record pressures and a new COVID variant. More than a dozen trusts have declared critical incidents amid rising rates of COVID and flu. Staff shortages and too few beds, the unprecedented pressure, they write, is expected to last until Easter, with hours-long ambulance queues and thousands of operations getting canceled. Meanwhile, a highly infectious Omicron subvariant, XBB.1.5, nicknamed the Kraken, is expected to pile even more pressure on the NHS, they say, in coming weeks. Data shows the strain already makes up 1 in 25 cases in the UK. Some scientists have said the unfolding situation warrants pandemic-era curbs, such as wearing masks in a bid to limit the demand for NHS care. Hospitals, GP practices, and care homes have pleaded with visitors to return wearing the face coverings. All of this comes on the very same day, by the way. The very same day that we get a new report on just how frickin' tragic the lockdowns and COVID policies have been on young children. Figures show more than 1 million children need treatment for serious mental health problems, according to a new report. Eating disorders and more in a time since lockdowns were imposed in England. NHS data analyzed by the PA News Agency shows 39% rise in a year in referrals for the National Health Service mental health treatment to under 18-year-olds. This compares with the previous year when the figure was way lower. From 2020 to early 2022, the UK government imposed multiple COVID-19 lockdowns and restrictions.
No, not for Bojo. Not for Boris Johnson.
Oh, not for Boris Johnson. By the way, he was out on New Year's Eve enjoying everything with the celebrations.
He likes to party.
The England-wide data include children who are suicidal, self-harming, suffering serious depression or anxiety, and those with eating disorders. All of this made me think of today. You remember that CNN doctor, Lena Wen?
Yeah.
Who was pushing, you know, go out, get multiple vaccines. Double masking for children, not just wearing one mask. Like we think you should even wear a double mask. all kinds of crazy stuff.
Masking outdoors. Yeah.
Masking outdoors. Like when you're taking a jog, wear a mask. Cause that's like one of the dumbest things you've ever heard. Like you should not be allowed to leave your home if you're unvaccinated. This was something else she said. The unvaccinated should not be allowed to leave their homes, she said. Here she is on CNN on just one occasion.
I mean, even the date, though, on that article shows what we knew about transmissibility and the vaccine's ability to prevent transmissibility. The date on that that's an unacceptable thing to say, given what we knew in September of 2021 about the vaccine and the spread of COVID.
Yeah, but she continued to say it and push it all over CNN. Here's one example where she was on pushing masks and getting multiple shots. Watch.
We should be keeping the events that are safe and also the events that have fun for people too. We can't be canceling everything, especially if we're going to be living with COVID for the foreseeable future. I would say that if you choose to go, make sure that you're vaccinated and boosted. Make sure that you're wearing a mask, even though it's outdoors. If there are lots of people packed around you, wearing a 3-ply surgical mask, don't wear a cloth mask. Cloth masks are little more than facial decorations. There's no place for them in light of Omicron. And so wear a high quality mask, at least a 3-ply surgical mask. And if you're going to be visiting elderly relatives or immunocompromised people after, wait 3 days, get tested, and then see those vulnerable people.
Yeah. And someone in the chat, in the Rumble chat, says that was in the fall of 2021. Yeah. That's absolutely insane. That's insanity.
Yeah.
That she was pushing this stuff in the fall of 2021. I mean, it's insanity anyway, but like the fact that all of that additional data had come out at
that
point.
By midsummer, we had the data about transmissibility based on the vaccine. We knew this already. Right. And so we knew that there was no reason to pressure other people to be vaccinated. And we knew the vaccine mandates did not have science behind them. We knew that by midsummer of 2021.
So then when she was, she pushed this, right? And then when she saw how developmentally challenged her children had become, she suddenly changed her tune. She then wrote a whole piece about it for the Washington Post. And she tweeted this out. Many on Twitter have asked, how did I go from being extremely cautious with COVID precautions for nearly 2 years to now resuming pre-pandemic activities, including not masking my young kids at school? I explain in this Washington Post piece. And so she does. Here's the piece. I'm a doctor. Here's why my kids won't wear masks this school year. And she writes, masking harmed our son's language development, limiting both kids' extracurriculars and social interactions would negatively affect their childhood and hinder my and my husband's ability to work. She has a whole litany of stories in this Washington Post piece about how it was detrimental for their social development. And again, continuing to push this stuff. So here we go. We're coming around all on it once again. All the data is here. You have doctors who are writing.
It's an incredibly self-serving way to put it. Like, if they continue to be needy, I will not be able to continue my own career. So I was fine with like a little speed bump in their childhood experience. But once it's affecting me, I'm not fine with it any
longer. Right. She's like, she says in the piece, 2 years is fine.
They'll catch up. It's fine. But no, they might actually have special needs that would hold my career trajectory back. Now I think differently.
Yeah. 2 years of a lockdown. I took 2 years of their childhood. I felt like that was a sacrifice, she says in the piece. But now I'm not going to take their whole childhood. What? And now the developmental problems as a result of the masks. And you're never going to mask your children again. Be curious to see where the mandates are and where she happens to live. I don't know if she lives in Maryland or where she is. If the school's mandated, is she going to pull her kids out?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, if I were the editor, I would just take out that little hinder my ability to work. Like, it would inevitably affect their childhood. No one would begrudge you for making a decision based on that. Right?
Right.
Okay. But then it's going to affect my ability to have a career. And that's that's the red line in the sand.
Yeah.
I just don't know why someone didn't say maybe don't write that, because it's a little self-serving.
Thank you so much for watching this segment here at Redacted. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time, trying to share the stories that the mainstream media will not cover. You should also come over and join our community of Redacted Rebels over at redacted.inc. That's our private locals community where we can share exclusive content that we simply cannot share here on YouTube. Come over and join the rebellion together right now by going to redacted.inc. We'll see you next time. We've got more news to get to on this Wednesday. We're going to talk about the Twitter files in a second, some bombshell revelations there. Journalist Whitney Webb is going to be joining us in a few minutes as well to break down the latest on Jeffrey Epstein and Sam Bankman-Fried and how this weird web is tied together. See what I did there? Whitney Webb. The dark sorted web.
Oh, yes. Like it.
We're also going to talk about the COVID death numbers and who's been lying about them. We'll talk about that and so much more. But first, let's talk about these Twitter files.
All right.
We are anxiously awaiting the Fauci files, by the way.
We didn't get that, but we got a little bit. I mean, I think it's juicy. You decide for yourself how juicy you think this is. Basically, the U.S. State Department was actively flagging Twitter accounts that was pushing the Wuhan lab leak story and other things that they did not want you to talk about on Twitter. This is another batch of the Twitter files, the files that Elon Musk has allowed journalists to see into how and why Twitter censorship got such... became such a beast. We had two new rounds released on Tuesday by journalist Matt Taibbi, and they are just as insidious as the rest. So let's take a look one at a time, because two of them were released within hours of each other. The first one is called the Twitter and the FBI belly button. I'm struggling a little with this metaphor.
This whole idea, I don't know if you guys, David and Philip too, like when I heard about this, like the idea of the FBI belly button, like that they called themselves the belly button. Like, we'll be the belly button, which is like...
belly button hurts by you saying that word so many times.
It's so creepy and weird. Like, we'll be the... Don't worry. We at the FBI will funnel everything that comes from the State Department, all of these other places, through our belly button to you at Twitter. Like, who thought of that? Elvis Chan at the FBI thought of that weird name.
It was...
Who's going to clean the lint out of it?
I think that in this corporate slang, I've never heard it used in any other corporate setting, to be the belly button means that it's the thing that you feed from, the main source. Like, umbilical cord is where your belly button once attached to. So I think that's maybe what they want it to be, is like the umbilical cord of interaction between Twitter and the government.
I guess.
Is that what, Philip, you
get? Why didn't they call themselves the placenta?
Right.
I would have went with placenta.
Yeah, because the placenta is edible. We've already established this in other times. Okay, so this thread shows that Twitter and the FBI were frustrated with public and private agencies going straight to the media with their lists of problematic Twitter accounts. One such agency was the Global Engagement Center, which is an arm of the U.S. State Department. So the Global Engagement Center, the State Department, was able to get the media to bite on this narrative that any accounts that were publishing COVID concerns were Russian misinformation campaigns. And also Chinese, and also Iranian. Here are two news headlines that just picked that up and ran with them. Agency France, Russia-linked disinformation campaign fueling coronavirus alarm, U.S. says. The article itself says that thousands of Russian-linked social media accounts have launched a coordinated effort to spread alarm about COVID, according to U.S. officials, and it's a big disinformation campaign promoting unfounded conspiracy theories that the U.S. is behind the COVID outbreak in a bid to damage the U.S. agency, the U.S. image around the world. State departments are saying that false personas are being used on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and other places. So, you know, Agency France went with this. Politico did too. Another report from Politico. Russian, Chinese, and Iranian disinformation narratives echo each other. They are all doing it. Again, from this article, China, Iran, and Russia are using COVID crisis to launch a propaganda and disinformation onslaught against the U.S., the State Department writes in a new report. Now, in hindsight, that seems quite laughable, given what we now know about COVID and the Central Intelligence Agency. What they had been doing online is creating social media accounts in other countries to sow discord. They're doing that. For sure, right? But the State Department says, no, those countries are doing this about COVID to me. to us, right? But the media picked these stories up like a good little dog. When Twitter was pushed to back these assertions up, they couldn't. Clemson University was trying to publish research again on Russian disinformation and asked Twitter why they couldn't get the results they wanted. Even Joel Roth, who is featured frequently in these Twitter files working with the government, he seemed to want to be very obliging to government requests in previous Twitter files, but he didn't like this request. Here's some internal communication. He says that Clemson is asking about the latest list of accounts that they shared with NBC. So they went straight to the press with their own research that they had not corroborated with Twitter. And they even said, why are you not publishing? Why have you not attributed to Russia in a while? As in, we kind of want this. Right.
Why haven't you guys like, come on, you guys got to make some more stuff up lately.
He says, you know, we told them we are unable to attribute the accounts to the IRA. That's the Russian Internet Russian agency. And they said we haven't made an attribution to Russia in some time and ask, can you do that? Basically, he said, you know, these comments were revelatory in their motivations. He's finding this upsetting, like, wow, they want us to blame Russia and we can't.
Like, we can't find anything about this. We've looked through these accounts and we can't find that Russia has been actively doing anything, but they're pushing us to try to find it.
And he's like, huh, that's noteworthy of malintent. Next thing.
It reminds me of like the Whitewater investigation. You know, it starts out as the Whitewater investigation and Ken Starr gets like carte blanche to do whatever the hell he wants, right? And it's like, go find something.
Yeah.
Just go find anything. And by the time 3 years pass, then Monica Lewinsky happens. It's not even during the time when he was allotted special counsel. It's like, it's just so wide open. Just go find something that we can pin this on.
Find me what I want. Well, I mean, Clemson is, these are researchers saying, researchers should not have an agenda towards their research paper. They should have a hypothesis, but they shouldn't say, can you please give me the results that I want?
Right.
I want this result to say Russian disinformation. You're not saying that. Can you say that?
Yeah, that's not how science is conducted.
No.
So what kind of throws me on this, and maybe I'm missing something, but Twitter is not the Washington Post. It's not journalism.
Yes.
It's a social media platform.
So right.
What exactly are they? They're not wanting them to write a story. Are they just wanting them to go find other people who are and push that? Or what?
Yes.
What exactly were they wanting? Yeah.
Well, this is what they want. They want something attributed to Russia on a regular basis so that they can use this in their conclusion.
And you get to see, I think, what Phillip's getting to here is like this idea, like, in, you know, see these articles parroting exactly what the State Department wants, right? Phillip, like, CNN Politics public goes right as soon as they have something from the intelligence community, CNN publishes it. Oh, State Department claims China, you know, what, or the Politico, that Politico piece that Natalie featured earlier, like Politico state report, Russian,
right.
Chinese and Iranian disinformation narratives echo one another. Like, so you can see all of like the Washington press corps, the corporate media that will just do the bidding of the intelligence community because they have well-seeded, you know, so
well, they just right pick there. It right up, even though researchers are going to Twitter and saying, we'd like this conclusion, please. And Twitter keeps saying, we can't find it. And in fact, Twitter kept trying to get researchers to come to them to verify research about foreign agents that they could not verify, but researchers refused to do this. And this caused a division between Twitter and the State Department and the press. So you see here, in CNN, Twitter disputes State Department claims that China coordinated coronavirus disinformation accounts. That is in response to this. The State Department saying China working with Russia to spread coronavirus disinformation. So why was Twitter pushing back against the State Department when it was doing what the FBI wanted so obligingly? Well, here is an internal email from Joel Roth. He says that, you know, basically Site Integrity's engagement, like his department's engagement with the DHS FBI, has been fruitful because they're apolitical. But he does not feel like the State Department is political, which I guess shows some level of conscious thought on his part. We should give him some credit for it, although that's a bit naive.
Right.
that the State Department is political and the FBI is not. I mean, this is written in 2020. So this is past the James Comey. This is past like
this is past the Hunter Biden laptop. The Biden laptop.
This is past the Mueller report. The FBI has proven themselves to be political. Why he's convincing himself that one department is political when the other is not, I'm not sure.
He's compartmentalizing.
It's like cognitive dissonance engaged here. But the FBI sort of pounced on this distinction, and that's where this comes in, where they're saying, oh, we know you're getting a lot of, you know, interaction from State Department, from all kinds of people. How about you just, you know, rely on us to be the belly button for the USG, which is US government. We can do that as well. And they took this belly button conversation to Signal, the messaging app, with private numbers and all. And that's when the deluge opened. Around October of 2020, Twitter started receiving requests from all government agencies through the FBI to suspend accounts and shut down conversations. This included from the Treasury, the NSA, virtually every U.S. state, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Homeland Security, and more. And they got requests from Congressman Adam Schiff asking Twitter to ban journalist Paul Sperry. Here is the
investigative journalist Paul Sperry.
Right. And so this is an internal note said that they had just met with Schiff's office and wanted feedback related to the banning of these two accounts. Now, the Paul Sperry one is interesting because they're saying that his work is reflective of harassment and QAnon conspiracies. Well, the Post explains that Schiff had a beef with Sperry because Sperry reported that something from an Obama official conversation that Schiff was trying to get rid of Trump within days of his inauguration. So Sperry reported this and Schiff never forgave him for it and told Twitter that he wanted him kicked off because of QAnon stuff. Sperry says he told the Post just today, I never have posted anything QAnon ever. Twitter did not comply with this request, but Sperry was later suspended for tweeting about the FBI raid on Trump's home, and he was never given a reason. Now, there's a hole here because presumably the journalists have an in on, well, why was he suspended? We don't get that answer. We don't get it now. And I would like it.
Like, why was he on reporting about the Trump raid?
He just was reporting about the Trump raid and his account was turned off. Hmm. And it didn't even seem to be anything that we didn't already know.
But, you know, this just further confirms what a slimeball Adam Schiff is. This is one more.
That is a data point in the Schiff as a slimeball column. For sure. The government did seem to copy and paste this narrative of a control mechanism around the war in Ukraine. Here is one government request asking for Russian media accounts to be flagged so that they could not, quote, conduct disinformation campaigns. Now, they do not provide any proof of that happening. And we've already shown how Twitter couldn't find that either, despite being good little lackeys. This is just a toe dip into the policies around Ukraine and Russia. I want more. I assume there is a lot more, so we'll put a pin on that. Now, all of these suspension requests from the government made Twitter employees so busy that the government did eventually pay for that time. We saw that in the Michael Schellenberger documents that we reported weeks ago. They paid $3.4 million to Twitter, essentially as a contractor, for doing these suspensions for the government. Now, the question is, why all this deleting? How did we slip down this slippery slope? How did this happen? This was revealed in the second set of documents. They show that Twitter and Facebook both were blamed for the outcome of the 2016 presidential election, meaning, and you probably recall this, that once Trump was elected, anyone who felt like that was a bad outcome went to social media and said, you let people get hateful on social media, that's why they voted for Trump. Or you let foreign actors influence voters. They never would have voted for Trump of their own volition. You know, they were just manipulated into doing so by foreign actors. That was the line. Well, So in essence, you did not vote for Trump on your, if you voted for Trump on your own free will, you were coerced into doing so. Now, I did once believe this narrative too, but Twitter is unable in these files to corroborate this story. They looked and looked in internal documents. They seem truly perplexed as to what Facebook was seeing that they were not. You may recall that Facebook deleted 300 accounts that they said had suspected Russian origin. And Twitter internally said, we can't do that because we're not finding this. Their internal documents saying, let's not make a statement because we don't know what they're playing at. And that's when Democrats and the media turned on Twitter. They let their dogs out. Senator Mark Warner held a press conference saying that Twitter had inadequate findings in looking for Russian intervention. Twitter executives warned one another that Warner was taking his cues for Hillary Clinton. Here is what Hillary Clinton was doing in the wake of her loss. Remember, this was a big way that she explained her loss, that she was dealing with a stack deck of Russian agents online.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that we didn't lose, that we ran a great campaign, and it was simply Russian disinformation that kept us from winning.
Yes.
It was Facebook memes. It was Pizzagate. It was these things.
Sure.
Not that you ran an awful campaign and no one knew what you stood for. And when you went to your website, it was 20 pages, you know, thousands of pages deep with no real clear message.
Right. And that's when Twitter decided to respond as a PR move, not because they thought that Russia was a problem. So they established this Russia task force. You can see October 2nd, 2017 is the date of this. Like, hey, guys, you've been put on the Russian task force. Here's what we're going to be doing. We're going to look at the 2016 election. We're going to prepare for congressional hearings. We're going to tell our story. We're going to evaluate our policy. So even though after this, you know, public pressure to do something about Russia, Twitter still did not seem able to find evidence of a coordinated approach.
So even after the public humiliation by Senator Warner and all of and Democrats blasting them
and the media
you'd think they would have at least tried to come up with something like, all right, we're going to put on our own team. We've got 5,000 employees that were all just fired for Elon Musk. What were they doing? They could have used a portion of those people. You could have taken 100 of those employees and made them into a task force. Like, let's find and root out, like, to preserve our own reputation.
Well, we don't know how many people were put on this task force, but it does seem like they gave it the old college try. Is that a dirty joke?
The old college try? I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Let's go to our resident dirty jokester, David.
It depends on if you're hearing it on, what is that, Animal House or
okay.
In right. Real life.
Sometimes I use words that I don't completely understand or phrases.
Yeah.
And
just, we all
glad you didn't say give her the heave ho.
Is that a dirty joke?
I don't know.
It did actually.
Sounds like a dirty joke.
Pop into my
mind.
That's
a nautical joke.
That's a nautical. Oh, it is a nautical joke.
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know. I was thinking of heaving. I don't know.
Because
anyway.
I know so much of ye old of, nautical world.
I was thinking of ships and pirates.
All right, me matey. Now, New York Times reporter Nicole Perlroth says in her book that the Russian disinformation campaign was coordinated and received 288 million Twitter impressions. It even had a code name, Compromat, and that agents were paid $1,400 per week. Now, when I read this book, I didn't think much of it, but when I see this on Twitter, that Twitter can't find the coordinated approach, I'm curious. Who is right and who is wrong? So I went back to her book and I went back to my notes and I looked at the sources. And so I thought, who does she source for this? Does she go to Russia? Well, no, she sources the U.S. Senate Intelligence Report and the Mueller Report and the Washington Post.
Oh.
So their report said something that Twitter could not internally find, yet they clearly wanted to. So I asked her about this on Twitter, and she was nice enough to reply. She says that she thinks Twitter is inadequate in what it's looking for. Here's her tweet to me. I asked her to sort of reconcile these two things, and she said, like Warner, I believe Twitter's detection and response was inadequate at best and deflective, which you gather from some of the internal comms pushed back to Meta and Facebook. So maybe she's seen something. Meta and Facebook is really silent on this. They're not telling us what they saw that Twitter did not.
Okay, but then is she seeing additional sourcing that confirmed this?
Or I can't tell because
she's only going off the Senate intelligence report.
Yes.
Which Mark Warner came out and said that they weren't doing anything on, and also from the Washington Post. So she's a New York Times reporter.
But see how this comes full circle, right? Because the Senate intelligence is clearly asking Twitter for results that it's not getting, but publishing its own conclusions, which is being reported by the press. So what here can be verified and what cannot? What we see here, what we can see with our own eyes, is only Twitter employees saying we're looking and we're not finding much.
Or you could do what the U.S. government does, which gets so frustrating to news reporters who are sitting in the in the State Department briefing room or in the intelligence briefing room, and they're asking questions of what was his name? Nick, I forget his name. And you're asking of these spokespeople, well, what intelligence are you?
Can you prove? Ned Price.
Ryerson. Ryerson. Ned Price. When you're asking them, well, okay, you're telling us that this is happening, but what evidence do you have? Can you share with us? I can't share. That's private intelligence level stuff. I can't share it. And so this is one of the big frustrations among reporters, is that they get to pawn it off on intelligence that they've seen, but we don't get to see it. They don't get to tell us about it. And then, they just take our word for it.
Yeah.
Just take our word
for it.
Well,
she's saying that this is deflective, meaning they're saying Facebook's finding this, but we don't. So I'm not sure how that's, I'm not completely sure what that means. She was nice enough to say she would come on the show to explain that. And she's a cybersecurity expert. So maybe she knows something that we don't. But again, what doesn't sit well with me is that Twitter wants to comply with the U.S. government and the media's response. They want to be a good dog, but they are not able. And so, again, the first report after launching the Russian investigative unit saying that they looked in, they came up with 15 accounts. 3 have connections with Russia and 2 are RT. Okay, that's not very exciting. You know, we were looking for like something an election make. Here's the final report. Okay, after we manually reviewed 2,500 accounts, we find 32 that are suspicious, 17 connected with Russia, and 2, have been suspended, have significant spend. One is Russia Today, and they're, spending less than $10,000. So this doesn't sound anything like the 300 accounts that Facebook said was spending $126 million.
Yeah.
Russia
Today is a news organization. So they're public,
and they're probably just spending money to get their stories out, not anything about elections.
Right. Yeah. Probably because they were being suppressed by Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so they'd have to spend money on promoted tweets just to even get their content out into the algorithm.
And that's when Twitter got worried about their inability to find what the government and the media wanted them to find, saying that it would impact their bottom line. Like if the media continues to consider us something that can't find Russian disinformation, they won't trust us and advertisers won't advertise with us. And so they started to cave to the U.S. government. They started to let them remove content, suspend users, and even Twitter internally seemed to know that things would never be the same around 2017 and beyond. Here's public policy vice president Colin Crowell admitting to much. He says, overall, my sense is that political terrain has shifted in Washington in the run-up to these hearings. The tech industry is going to get a lot more security and questioning, and we will not be reverting to the status quo in D.C. anytime soon, meaning like they're in now. The bug is in now. They are going to start actively asking us to monitor content and remove content, and we can't put that horse back in the barn.
Yeah. And just look what's happening with TikTok. So we're waiting, anxiously awaiting the Fauci files and what, and the Ukraine files. I can't wait. Those are the two big ones to me that I cannot wait to see. And so we could see the Fauci files at any minute, quite honestly. We will bring you full reporting on those two once we have them here on Redacted. We've got a lot more news to get to. Journalist Whitney Webb is going to be joining us in a minute to talk about the latest Epstein revelations as well as SBF. We're also going to talk about the COVID death rates. I should mention, first of all, though, to subscribe to our channel. When you subscribe, your name pops up here on our big board. So, and we should see a new rebel. And when you do, you can join the rebellion. A new rebel will pop up here on the big screen. So all you need to do is, there we go. There's a new rebel. Ruben Spino. Nice to welcome. Welcome to the channel. Thank you for becoming a
Ruben
subscriber.
Ruben Espino, maybe.
Did I say Ruben? Oh, Spino. Okay. Thank you, Ruben. Welcome to Redacted. And thank you for subscribing, whether on YouTube or on Rumble. We're going to be moving to Rumble exclusively here later in the show because there's stories we simply won't be able to cover on YouTube for censorship reasons. And thanks to our exclusive partnership with Rumble, we will be over there exclusively. So hello to all of our Rumblers. By the way, we should mention our Rumble channel is rumble.com/redacted. So rumble.com/redacted. Make sure you're subscribed to us on Rumble, and that way you can continue to watch the stream. We're going to be moving over there after our Whitney Webb interview here in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about our friends over at Moomoo. It's a new year and a new opportunity for you to get up to 15 free stocks right now just by opening up a Moomoo account. Depending on where you are in the world right now, if you go to redacted.inc/Moomoo, you can get up to 15 free stocks now in 2023. They've extended their promotion to be entered into the chance to get that $60,000 sweepstakes. So what you do is you sign up, you get a free stock. And then when you make your initial deposit, you get your additional free stocks. And then if you make a higher deposit, you get all of those 15 free stocks. And again, you're not spending money. You're just putting it in your account. You don't have to do anything with it. You just get the free stocks. And then once you get the free stocks, you can always, cash them out and sit on them. Or while the market is in the toilet right now, you can watch those stocks grow over the next year. Again, you don't have to do anything, but you can open your account right now and start to learn because they've got an amazing trading platform, amazing learning tools, education tools, all sorts of things to make you an interesting, more educated trader. So if you'd like to learn about commodities trading, you like to learn about investing in different gold stocks, gold producers like I do, you can check them out by going to redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's how you get those 15 free stocks. Again, redacted.inc/Moomoo is the URL to visit. Well, the deep state mafia just scored some major victories over the past 24 hours. In the first instance, the Bill Clinton appointed federal judge in the Southern District of New York, Lewis Kaplan, ruled to keep secret the two entities that funded Sam Bankman-Fried's $250 million bail. SBF got to spend the holiday at his parents' home in California, but the judge is hiding the names of those who are paying SBF's bond. So score one for the deep state mafia. Maybe it was Bill Clinton himself or the Clinton Foundation who put up the money. We'll never know about it. And the second story involves the Attorney General of the Virgin Islands, the Virgin Islands' top prosecutor, who reached a more than $105 million settlement with Jeffrey Epstein's estate, lost her job just days after suing J.P. Morgan Chase in connection with her probe. She accused J.P. Morgan of facilitating and concealing Jeffrey Epstein's human trafficking network, and she was suddenly fired for it. For more on this, we want to bring in excellent journalist Whitney Webb, the author of the two-part book, One Nation Under Blackmail, The Sordid Union Between Intelligence and Crime That Gave Rise to Jeffrey Epstein. Whitney, Happy New Year to you. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
So let's start with the Epstein story. I mean, this is a pretty, to me, struck me as pretty odd. Just a few days after this Virginia Islands top prosecutor files this suit against J.P. Morgan Chase, she suddenly loses her job. Can you pull back the curtain on this story for us?
Yeah, so I've said before in past interviews that when you look at the difference between the sex trafficking cases that were targeting Epstein and his estate versus the ones that were pursuing a more financial angle, there's a very big difference in how those have played out. So before this case, what we had was the case involving Jeffrey Epstein and Deutsche Bank. And over the course of that case, I'm sure probably your audience might remember this, the home of the judge was shot up and her son was murdered on the eve of that trial beginning. And, you know, in my opinion, they don't really want the financial angle to come out because it's a lot more damaging to them. As I've talked about in, you know, about my work on the Epstein case, it's very clear to me that he was just as much a financial criminal as a sex criminal. So the financial crimes involve a whole host of institutions and powerful individuals. And I think there's a much more concerted effort there to keep that information from coming to light. And that's what you have this, the main focus when it comes to Epstein is consistently sex trafficking, not the financial crimes. So the second you have people start digging into the financial aspect of his activities, the bigger the guns are that come out, I guess you could say. So I'm not really surprised that this lady ended up losing her job. Now, the governor of the Virgin Islands has claimed that it wasn't related to this particular case, but he did say that he was displeased with this woman as attorney general with her previous lawsuits against Epstein's estate. So it is related to the estate, even if he claims it's not related to this particular case. But I don't really know about that. Also, from what I understand, the lawsuit itself had several large redacted components that were referring to J.P. Morgan's facilitation of Epstein's sex trafficking activities in the island. Right. And one of the accounts that was a focus of that lawsuit is very interesting. It's called, refers to Southern Trust. So Southern Trust was also a company that Jeffrey Epstein ran from the Virgin Islands. And so the lawsuit claims that this was basically a front for the trafficking activities and that J.P. Morgan was aware of this. But Southern Trust also, according to Virgin Islands records, Epstein was trying to create basically a genomic sequencing company, was trying to use it to obtain the genetic sequences of most Native Islanders on the Virgin Islands and try and turn it into what he referred to as a biomedical Google. This is back in like 2012 or so, showed a very unusual interest in wanting to basically have a class of young islanders that he would train and all of this weird stuff around this company. And it's been very poorly explored, even by the government of the Virgin Islands itself. And so now that you have this woman being fired, it's very likely that, you know, that will have an effect on her successors and their willingness to pursue any of these threads related to the Epstein case as it relates specifically to the Virgin Island activities, which, again, as I just said, have not been well explored.
And so who do you think is pulling the strings on this? I mean, is it J.P. Morgan? Is J.P. Morgan itself that powerful? I mean, as a large financial institution?
Well, yeah. So I'll give you an example about J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan's the head of it is Jamie Dimon, right? So right. Jamie Dimon was selected by a group of people. And one of those people is a guy named, I think his first name's Alan Kessler, who is the co-founder with Leslie Wexner of the New Albany Company, in which Epstein himself was intimately involved. But he's one of Leslie Wexner's closest business associates. And he is intimately involved with J.P. Morgan and was involved in having the head of J.P. Morgan being selected for that very role in the early 2000s. And if we remember back to J.P. Morgan is what ended up absorbing Bear Stearns, which had previously been Epstein's bank. And his former employer as well was absorbed into J.P. Morgan. And they used he used J.P. Morgan for a while, but was later dumped by that bank and then went to Deutsche Bank. So he's had a series of banks that he's used over the years. But J.P. Morgan is definitely one of the more suspect ones and has, you know, some pretty clear connections to this relatively close-lit network around Epstein and Wexner.
Do you think we'll get answers out of the Virgin Islands if you have the top prosecutor being fired? Does it seem like we're going to be able to pull those threads any further, or is anyone else willing to stick their neck out in that way?
I think within the government of the Virgin Islands, remember, this is the U.S. Virgin Islands, so it's basically, you know, essentially a colony of the United States. And while you have, you know, the current administration in the U.S. and, you know, most likely, you know, successor governments, it's very unlikely, I think, that we'll see any change here. You're not going to, you know, obviously this lady was fired because of her willingness to go after people that were inconvenient. She was willing to pursue legal action that was inconvenient to the powers that be and essentially dominate the Virgin Islands, right? So there's a sovereignty issue there, I think, is part of it. But I think the firing is obviously going to make a statement and make a point to her, you know, Denise Gregory's successors that they can't, you know, if they want to keep their job, they can't go the same route she did, basically.
And you said, you mentioned Jamie Dimon. I can't help but think when she lays out in her lawsuit, there was the concealing, the facilitation of Epstein's human trafficking network. So helping to facilitate it and the concealing of it, the hiding of it. I mean, that seems to be pretty, she has pretty strong evidence. She's going to make that claim in a lawsuit. Do you think that this goes all the way? What do you think that means? And does this, do you think this goes all the way to the top, to the Jamie Dimon level?
Well, it definitely goes pretty high up in both JP Morgan and Deutsche Bank. We know that in some of these banks, for example, there were suspicious activity reports about Epstein and that they were flagged by people at the bank, and then people above them, you know, basically stopped any sort of investigation into those suspicious activity reports.
Wow.
And there was quite a decent number of them at the time. I think there's more reporting on that from the Deutsche Bank side than the JP Morgan side, but I believe this happened, was known to have happened at both banks a couple years ago. So yeah, I'm sure she had plenty of evidence.
God, what they're trying to hide is unbelievable. And then that brings us to the SBF story. What are they trying to hide here? So Sam Bankman-Fried gets to spend Christmas with his parents. Someone or multiple institutions or multiple groups put up about $250 million in bond to get him out on bail. They still have yet, according to the reports I'm reading, to even put that money up. They've made guarantees of putting up $250 million. So he gets to go spend Christmas with his family in California. And this judge yesterday, this Clinton-appointed judge in the Southern District of New York, says, we're not going to unseal those names of who put up that money, even though there's been many requests for that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So basically, this isn't surprising. This is the latest move in a succession of moves to obfuscate other people that were involved with FTX or Sam Bankman-Fried as it relates to the Ponzi scheme of FTX. So earlier on, for example, there were people, I think it was the Martins at Wall Street on Parade, reported that it was very odd that certain moves were made in court. As relatively soon after the bankruptcy proceedings began, to obfuscate who exactly had appointed the interim CEO of FTX and who had put Sullivan and Cromwell, the law firm, which is very much tied to the U.S. intelligence apparatus, having been the law firm of the Dulles brothers, for example. That they were apparently making decisions, but someone had put them in that position to do that. And then also there was an effort to obfuscate people aside from Sam Bankman-Fried and some of his closest associate whose names are known, what other people had access to those accounts or company entities. There's been an effort to obfuscate certain people from the public eye. So, you know, it's very possible there could be an overlap there with the people paying his bail because they don't want their involvement in this whole scandal to come out necessarily. But, you know, what they're trying to do here is trying to do a very, what I would basically say, a controlled demolition of the whole FTX scenario. It's very much like what we saw, I think, with the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. There's an effort to control the narrative more than anything else, give the appearance that justice was done and hope that this will go away and hope that they can just memory hole the story. So like with Ghislaine Maxwell, there was a lot of weird stuff going on in that trial. You actually, by the way, have an overlap with the legal team of Sam Bankman-Fried. Has one of Ghislaine Maxwell's defense lawyers on his legal team.
You can't make this up.
Oddly, oddly enough. But, you know, with SBF, they want to paint the narrative that it was just, you know, one guy doing bad things and he didn't have any sort of bigger sponsorship behind him. That's, you know, being allowed to, you know, remain hidden during this whole process. And I think that's the same essentially that happened with Ghislaine Maxwell. It was all Ghislaine Maxwell. It was all Epstein. There was no one else. Let's not talk about Leslie Wexner. Let's not talk about any of these other powerful people involved or any of the cash flows or any of that, or Ghislaine Maxwell's family ties to intelligence, or, you know, none of that was brought up. And I think it's going to be the same thing with Sam Bankman-Fried. They want a very specific narrative to be out there, and they don't want people looking on the periphery of what they're trying to have people focus on, which is just SBF. You know, are they going to crucify the guy or let him off? I don't know. I think enough people are angry that they feel like they have, in order to maintain the veneer that our justice system works, have to, you know, take him down to some extent. But look at Ghislaine Maxwell. She's in country club prison right now for basically being the madam of an industrial human trafficking operation. And she's doing like yoga and having Thanksgiving, vegan Thanksgiving dinners and stuff. You know, it's not exactly hard time like most people think of it. And it's very possible that she could be, you know, have parole at some point in the not so distant future. I mean, who really knows? Because no one's really paying attention, right? And I think it's the same. It could probably go the same way with SBF. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I think there's going to be an effort, as there already has been, an effort to restrict the names of certain parties from being revealed in court.
And I was
the fact that this judge is doing that, you know, I think it's going to keep happening throughout the course of the trial.
I'll get you out of here on this question, which is, I mean, I was surprised, maybe I shouldn't have been, that he pled not guilty. And so now we're going to go to trial on this. Do you think that we'll see this is going to happen? I mean, I'm asking you to sort of prognosticate, but there's going to be discovery. We're going to hear a lot of, I mean, presumably we'll hear a lot of evidence to support his innocence here. Is he going to name names? I mean, I thought that there would reach some sort of a settlement. This would be kept quiet.
Well, two of the other top people at FTX, Carolyn Ellison being one of them, have pled guilty, actually. And so the evidence of that case, I mean, there'll probably be some overlap there. They're cooperating with prosecutors. Those prosecutors will come with that evidence, most likely, against Sam Bankman-Fried. It's very possible that Sam Bankman-Fried will try and use his justification, all sorts of things that we've already seen him do in his public interviews since the bankruptcy, saying, oh, I was just in over my head and I just wanted to do all this good. Sort of, he'll refer back to his involvement with the effective altruist movement and things of that nature. I'm sure he's just going to try and wiggle his way out, essentially. But the point I want to make here is that people like Sam Bankman-Fried and even people like Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein, they're the ones put in the public eye. And I would argue that's because they're middle management. The people that are pulling their strings, they always try and hide, and they generally succeed in doing that. But it's, you know, incumbent on us to try and follow the threads that we can find that they haven't, you know, tied up completely, and pursue that to get a closer look at what's actually going on here. Because it's very clear to me, at least in the case of FTX, just like the Epstein case, there's obviously a lot more going on there. And I think it's very interesting, the similarities between Sam Bankman-Fried's involvement with the most recent election. And then you look at how Epstein was involved with the Clinton's 1996 campaign finance scandal. And you have a lot of overlap with that. And what happened relatively recently with FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried and the Democratic Party in Ukraine and all of that. It seems to me that there's a certain network here that engages in these patterns of behavior. Because remember, before Epstein did that for the Clintons, he was a Ponzi schemer, just like Sam Bankman-Fried, apparently.
Right.
Right.
And left with a slap on the hand. And that's about it. Slap on the wrist.
Yeah. His name gets dropped from the case and he goes straight to major DNC fundraising stuff. So, you know, this I would argue that there's a lot more of a pattern here. And I would encourage people to look for those patterns. There's obviously a much bigger story here.
Well, that's why we love having you on, because if there's one person that can get to the heart of this, it's you. Thank you for the great work you continue to do. We appreciate it. And thanks for joining us once again, Whitney. Have a happy new year to you.
Thanks so much. You too.
That's one excellent journalist, and just an unbelievable crazy story.
Yes. So crazy.
So, all right, we've got a lot more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We're going to look at the COVID death rates.
Yes, based on a new peer-reviewed study out of Stanford, showing fatality rates and how they were different than what we were told. This is pre-vaccination. We can't say much more about it on YouTube, given the rules of engagement. So that's why we are going to move over to Rumble now. So if you're watching us on YouTube, click the link that you see in the chat here. If you're watching this later on YouTube, seek these segments out on Rumble, please. If you're on Rumble, stay right where you are. Thank you for joining us, because that's where we can speak freely.
So the URL is rumble.com/redacted, rumble.com/redacted. The live stream will continue. We're going to end our live stream right now on YouTube, but please continue the live stream right on Rumble. Come over and join us, all 21,000 of you. Come over to Rumble right now and join us for the other two stories that we're going to cover here that we probably will not be covering on YouTube at all, because we will be censored again.
Rumble. I can see on Rumble, they're like, uh-oh, here comes the YouTubers. Those of you on YouTube, come on over, show them that you're not so bad.
A lot of people, Jay Doe's in the Rumble rant. Jay Doe's,
oh shit, there Jay, goes the planet.
Jay Doe's in the Rumble chat says, oh, YouTube sucks. Here come the YouTubers. Hey, everyone on Rumble, be nice to the YouTubers. We got a great audience on YouTube. I think they maybe find YouTube, it might be a little easy to use. So it's an old muscle memory.
We don't have those kind of YouTube followers. Come on.
We have smart people.
You know.
So come on over.
Trust us.
The reason we love Rumble so much is because of censorship, no censorship. And they allow us to say whatever we want, and we won't be flagged for it, copyrighted, hidden, taken down, banned, like we've been about four times now on YouTube. So come on over to Rumble right now, everybody. Okay. So we are officially live on Rumble. Thank you to our YouTube audience. Bye-bye. And we want to tell you about our friends over at Birch Gold before we move on to the other stories in the show today. So are the Biden administration, their New Year's goals of tax and spend, and are they turning a blind eye to inflation? Are they at odds with your goals of securing your savings? When you've finally had enough of the games government is playing with your savings and your retirement, diversify into gold with Birch Gold. Now, I am tired of my money being impacted by stupid decisions by leaders in Washington or stock decisions. I mean, just look what happened to Tesla. Right? Think about how Tesla stock and the plummeting it took in just December of this year alone. For over 5,000 years, gold has withstood inflation, geopolitical turmoil, and stock market crashes. And here's the great news, you can still get it. In fact, you can own gold and silver in a tax-sheltered retirement account. And I think gold just hit a six-month high today.
Yes, it did.
Crazy. And it's projected to go much higher this year. Birch Gold makes it easy to convert an IRA or 401k into an IRA in precious metals. Here's what you need to do. You visit birchgold.com/redacted to claim your free info kit on gold. With almost 20 years experience converting IRAs and 401ks into precious metals IRAs, Birch Gold can help you protect yourself with gold today by visiting birchgold.com/redacted. They have an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of happy customers, and countless 5-star reviews. Secure your future with gold. Start today with a free info kit. There's a zero obligation to make this request. Just visit birchgold.com/redacted to get your free gold kit. Again, that's birchgold.com/redacted. So welcome to all of our friends on Rumble. Good to see all of you. We have a new rebel, Westlakey47.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining the rebellion.
All right. And thank you for being nice to anyone who was previously on YouTube and coming over here. You guys, you have to get along. We all have something in common, is that we want to discuss things that the mainstream media refuses to discuss. We all want to ask questions that the mainstream media does not want to ask. So we are common ground here.
And what I like to think of, in our discussions with Rumble, it's like, let's use YouTube, right? Let's use those corporate guys and to build our Rumble audience.
Like, yes.
I mean, look, it's the largest platform. We can't just abandon it, but we can certainly use it to build up. And then the goal is to eventually say bye-bye.
Because it feels terrible when we do stories such as talking about Pfizer's own data about vaccine trials, and then we get suspended for 2 weeks on YouTube. We don't have a dog in this fight. We just want to ask these questions. And when we are punished for it, we can see exactly how the mainstream media is towing a line for corporate profits and censoring voices. And we find that unacceptable. So the story that we're going to do now is about the COVID fatality rate. And we remind you that YouTube's policy still say that you cannot downplay the fatality of COVID. Right, Philip, isn't that sort of, Philip studies these things extensively.
I went through it this morning. I went through YouTube's literally their policies today on this. And it's, I think that's exactly right. Right, Philip?
Yeah, you can't argue with the fatality rates. That's one of the things that they're not okay with.
Okay.
Anything that doesn't go with the official, like, CDC, WHO, like, that's the only official narrative that it's allowed on that specific.
Well, technically, they're not even in line with them anymore. So
isn't that crazy?
Make any sense.
I mean, and like in all the, like, seriously, and on the data on ivermectin and hydrochloroquine and all of the, like, the YouTube's terms of service, they're so out of date. And
even when you say those things, I'm like, ooh, we're going to get punished.
No, you know, I would love to have on as the CEO of YouTube and be able to sit down and ask her those questions, you know, like, why, you know, here's all the data. Why are your YouTube service terms pointing in this direction, saying that basically spreading
out of line with peer reviewed?
Because it always said at the bottom of videos that talk about it, it says we go by the WHO, and they have sites leading to CDC and to WHO. But if they're not going to keep up with their own data because that data has changed, then why the hell even have that on there? Why even try to have a dog in the fight if you're not going to stay up to date on what when they change?
Exactly.
That is a relevant question. Okay, so
2023, welcome to Redacted. Thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel, being a part of our community. We do have a daily newsletter. It publishes every Monday through Friday, every morning around 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. If you go to redacted.inc, that's how to sign up. It's totally free. You can read it about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning. Again, sign up. You'll have the newsletter in your inbox tomorrow morning at redacted.inc. We will see you back here tomorrow.